Blog Talk Radio.
Tariq,
bro.
Yes, sir.
All right. Technology, engineering, and mathematics. Of the host, and it's off of Original Man Scientific. And I also have my co-host with me, Brother Jabril.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Peace and blessings, everyone. Shalom, ni hao, hola, all of the above. Assalamu alaikum. For those who don't know what that means, simply means peace be unto you. Happy to be here, and let's have a good time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. A short prayer. And all the tropical storms are in the Atlantic Ocean and in the coast. So, Brother Jabril, can you do that for us?
Yes, sir. Everyone, if we could, as are listening, just bow our heads and listen. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Master of the Day of Judgment in which we now live. Indeed we serve and indeed we beseech for thine aid. O Allah, guide us on the right path, the path of those upon whom thou hast bestowed favors, not the path of those upon whom wrath is brought down, nor those who go astray. O Allah, we, your humble students, your humble children, ask you that you protect those families that are directly being affected right now by still Hurricane Harvey as well as Hurricane Irma as it comes through the Florida area. Please bless those families to use the greatest of intelligence and to stay put if they are now in the weather and to just come out unscathed with minimal damage. Oh Allah, we ask that you just watch over everyone, that they may just make good decisions, that you allow for the damage to not take many human lives and then to just be more or less relegated to property. We ask this all in your name, that you keep everyone safe and you allow us to stay in prayer for our loved ones and for the people that are being affected. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Brother Jabril. Our prayers are going out to the families and the friends of those who are affected by the storm. I'm in Atlanta. I know we're going to get some very strong winds in the next couple of days, possibly some flooding. So I'm praying that anybody or anything like that, whoever is getting, and like Brother Jabril was in his prayer, that is relegated to the and not the loss of human life. But as we were saying before, this is the third installment of season two. On the line with us today, we have Brother Shaheed Muhammad. He's a University alumni. How's Brother Shaheed?
I'm doing well, Brother Tariq. How are you doing today?
Well, Allah's grace. How's it feeling?
Everything is well with me, Brother Tariq, but I can barely, I can't hear you very well. I can hear Brother Jabril just fine, but your voice is kind of breaking up.
Okay, give me 1 second. All right, can everyone hear me now?
Yes, sir. I can hear
so
you better.
So far, so
all right.
Good, sir.
That's a lot better?
Yes, sir.
All right. Wonderful,
it
wonderful.
Stays that way.
So, great, awesome. All right, Brother Shaheed, please forgive me on that. But I really wanted you to just kind of give us a brief bio of yourself before we go into getting to know more about you. Can you kind of just give us the rundown of who you are, where you're from, and what area of science you're in?
Yes, sir. So my name is Shaheed Muhammad, like you said, and last year in May 2016, I graduated from Morgan State University doing electrical engineering. And while I was at Morgan, I specialized my degree in the power and energy track. So I've always had a strong passion and desire to learn as much science as possible. And from the earliest age, I can't remember a time where I wasn't fascinated and heavily involved in as much science as I possibly can get into. So I chose, when looking to go to college, I chose electrical engineering because I fell in love with energy when I noticed how dependent our society is on availability to energy. If you look around the world, you see a linear relationship between the most powerful nations in the world and the ones that have the most access to cheap, affordable energy. I mean, our whole entire society and modern world is based upon our utilization of energy, you know, from travel, transportation to the distribution in our daily usage, from our handheld devices to running all of our different mechanisms that we use on a daily basis is all about energy. So I wanted to get into energy production.
Okay. All right, great. So in terms of Morgan State, what drew you to Morgan State University? Was it something, was it a school you applied to, or was it kind of like a last resort?
No, it definitely was a school that I applied to because I wanted to go somewhere that wasn't too far away from where I grew up. I grew up in Waldorf, Maryland. For those that don't know, that's about 45 minutes south of Washington, D.C., and Morgan State University is in Baltimore, Maryland, which is not too far away from Washington, D.C. But Morgan State has one of the best undergraduate engineering programs for African-Americans in the country. Morgan State routinely puts out tremendous black engineers. So once I found out that they had my major and I heard about their record of producing great engineers, I wanted to be a part of it. It was an HBCU. I wanted to get a part of that experience for, you know, culture and development of myself as a man, as well as my intellectual, my learning. So I thought Morgan was great when I was in high school, when I heard about everything it had to offer.
And Morgan State is an HBCU, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and was attending an HBCU important as well? Was that also part of your decision?
Yes, it definitely was for me. I always wanted to attend an HBCU because I've always loved my people, and just to be around my people and learning and being around other young black people who have similar mindsets, people who are looking to further themselves and develop themselves, who are the same age as you, is a good experience for everybody.
Right, right. Now, going back to working with people who are the same age as you, have you been able to experience a lot of that in your current field, or was it more so in your throughout being in college? So are you able to kind of balance that, having that same kind of interaction with young people now in your career after college?
For me personally, no, I haven't been able to. Where I work at right now is mainly older people, a lot older than me actually. But in college, it's nothing but people your age. Whether it be people in undergrad or graduate school, it's mainly people that are your age with similar life experiences that you can relate to and similar goals.
Okay, cool. So just based off what you majored in and what inspired you to go into STEM, before we go into that part, can you kind of give those who are listening that may not be familiar a brief rundown of what electrical engineering is and how that relates to power and energy?
Yes, sir. That's a really good question that is often asked, because electrical engineering is a very broad spectrum. It deals with a very broad spectrum of things. So electrical engineer could do anything from build power systems in terms of the generation of electricity to working on cell phones or a satellite instrument, or anything really dealing with electricity. So different electrical engineers work on circuitry. So in our cell phones, we have circuit boards that pretty much manipulate electricity to do certain different things.
Right.
Technicians or engineers who work on radar systems, they use electricity in the form of radiation to perform our radar, radio detection and ranging. It's very broad. So there's electrical engineers that deal with exclusively computer programming to it's just a plethora of different things that you can do with it. So with power and energy, that's all about generating actual electricity from like a large scale perspective to power homes and buildings and infrastructure.
And that kind of focuses more on the source as well too, like if it's the sun or wind or hydro.
Right. So there's so many different ways to produce electricity. The common ones that people know about are burning of fossil fuels,
mm-hmm.
and then renewable technology, which is diverse, that they can come from wind, and the spinning of a wind turbine, solar panels that generate electricity directly from the sun, hydroelectricity, which is the turning of water turbines. But the majority of wind technology comes from a turbine. So in the rotation of the turbine through electromagnetic induction, electricity is generated like that. So it takes some source of energy to cause rotation. And when you rotate magnets around wires or conductors, that produces electricity. So that's how most of our electricity is generated. So even power plants like nuclear plants, what they're doing is they're using a nuclear reaction to heat up water, actually. And the water produces steam, and they use steam to turn a turbine. But the turning of the turbine is what actually produces electricity.
Wow. And what was your first introduction to electrical engineering? Was it in college, or did you get exposed to it a little early in high school? Was it something that you saw in your childhood days, or what was the introduction like for electrical engineering?
I'm not entirely sure my first introduction of it. I think I can't remember a time prior to college when I really got into circuits or anything like that. But I think early on, I was into energy. Like I said, I've kind of always been into science from a broad perspective, but I really kind of focused, I think, in high school on energy once I found out how dependent our society is upon it.
Right, right. Okay. Awesome. I'm not going to take up too much of the questions. I know my brother has to eat too. So, Brother Jabril, you got anything for him?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know I'm always brewing something over here, Brother Tariq. peace and blessings, everyone, again. Brother Shahid, you know, it's interesting that we have you on the show with an interest in power and energy, and the country is dealing with a series of major catastrophes that
right.
really plague or make it difficult for those type of processes. So I guess from a disaster preparedness standpoint, and I don't know how much experience you have in this regard, but could you maybe speak to how important or like the type of processes involved in terms of monitoring, in terms of like keeping the lights on, in terms of having power during a crisis like this? What are those some type of processes? What are some things people can maybe do to ensure that they have power, and how can that affect them during this time?
Right, that's an excellent question. And I've been thinking about that, looking at all the disasters and things that are happening. I think from a larger scale, from a country's perspective, when they got to supply power to their citizens, it's very difficult when the infrastructure is destroyed. So the wind and the storm, it destroys the power lines and kind of destroys the distribution system. So it makes it very difficult to distribute power to your citizens. It's hard to keep the lights on because, you know, they have to actually go and physically repair the physical destruction to the infrastructure system. But also they have to look out for potential nuclear sites. I heard on the news yesterday that some nuclear power plants in Florida were endangered because of the impending storm. So they had to have foresight into that and knowing that they had to shut the reactors down a few days ahead, I believe, so that they can take whatever processes they need to ensure that they don't have a nuclear meltdown like what happened in Fukushima, I believe, Japan. From an individual's perspective, there's different things. There's different options that you can do to provide power for yourself and your home. I think the most common form is to have a household generator that maybe runs on some type of fuel, like gasoline or some other source that all you do is put fuel into it, and it'll power your house for a certain amount of time. There's also people have small-scale solar energy where they had solar panels that are capable of powering their household and certain maybe inverters or charge controllers that go with the solar panels that it can provide power for your individual house. But, of course, that only provides power during the daytime. So when you have solar panel, you have to couple that with a battery system so that you can store enough power to provide during the nighttime.
Yes, sir. You know, it's just interesting because, you know, I think this is a prime time, or these are prime times when innovation occurs, you know. But people who are out on the outside looking in are blessed to be able to see things, and even though there's emotion involved, kind of focus on the science. You know, I have been thinking about ways in which that, I know maybe not the whole thing, but even parts of the hurricane can be harnessed. So that's a lot of wind energy being generated, right? And then, you know, with that, how can, if at all possible, one be able to harness part of the wind to be able to, like, you know, keep lights on or be able to, like, have power in certain areas. But definitely being prepared ahead of time with, you know, those multifaceted, you know, generators or, like, you know, flashlights and things that people have their own power to be able to supply it is definitely very important. And I definitely took some notes about that household generator and that the inverter and the battery pack. So thank you so much. I guess kind of continuing on that, on the track, I guess, so one thing that I was very interested in is some of your independent studies. So particularly as pertains to the electromagnetic fields and biological organisms, I guess the interaction between them, could you kind of speak to, I guess, first how the interest in that was born and also what specifically you're trying to look into and work on when it comes to the electromagnetic fields and biological organisms?
Yes, sir. Pretty much me starting that study started as a subset of my study in energy and trying to produce different energy technology. I didn't expect it to expand into what it did, but that's just, I guess, the nature of, like, finding out new information. It just expands infinitely. So I wanted to study how, you know, electromagnetic radiation that we all encounter on a daily basis, you know, even right now as we're talking on our cell phones, how does that actually affect biology? So it kind of expanded way beyond my belief that it ever would and forced me really to delve into different areas of study in science. So not just electricity, but I had to study some chemistry. I had to study a lot of biology and some physics. So because in reality, even though we often are taught these different sciences in kind of a box, in reality, they all are interconnected. And we classify a certain portion of reality or science as biology or as physics or as chemistry. But in reality, you know, biology is the systematic emergence of chemistry. So everything obeys physical laws. So when you study a real phenomenon, you really have to be diverse in your knowledge of science, because studying a human interaction or a biological reaction requires you to know chemistry. It requires you to know physics and all these different things. So it kind of forced me to be diverse and to learn up on some things that I never thought I would need. So I kind of got into it, and I found pretty profound info in terms of its realm of applicable knowledge that we can use to protect ourselves on kind of a daily basis and to spread awareness of you know, the possible different effects that radiation can have on biology. So did you want me to get into some of that?
Yeah. If you wouldn't mind, you know, I'm sorry, my science senses are tingling. If you wouldn't mind going into some of the results or the info that you found out, I think that would be pretty cool for the audience.
Yes, sir. So pretty much we know we often talk about electromagnetic radiation and radiation in general. That's a common phrase. But just to give some background on that, we know that radiation is pretty much just the propagation of electromagnetic energy. So electricity and magnetism are both coupled together. So when you have electricity, magnetism is right there with it.
Yes.
So electromagnetic energy exists on a spectrum.
Right.
And that spectrum is dictated by frequency. So each frequency, as the frequency changes, the behavior of the energy changes, and it's almost like a different reality or a different code or a different key for each frequency. So when we look at a rainbow, each different color in a rainbow just corresponds to a different frequency, the same energy,
right,
but a different rate.
Right.
So we were able to interpret and decipher the reality through our senses that perceive energy in different forms. So the human ear, as an example, can hear sound vibrations from about 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. But once you go above 20 kilohertz, that same energy may be present, but it's imperceptible to our ears. So that's a good analogy, I guess, to electromagnetic radiation in that, you know, radar systems use energy within the radio frequency band. But once you get a little higher into the microwaves, you use a different type of technology, or it has different purposes. So when you're dealing with radiation, you know, you always have to be specific in terms of what type of radiation or what frequency are we talking about. So once you get past the visible spectrum of light and electromagnetic radiation, you get to ultraviolet, and once you get to
right.
the ultraviolet end and above, that energy is considered ionizing radiation, and
right.
that energy is well documented to have health hazards into biological organisms, because the energy and the frequency are co-dependent. So once you increase frequency, you're increasing the energy. So at the high
yeah.
frequency end of the spectrum, when it's ionizing radiation, that radiation it can ionize different molecules and different atoms, causing different chain reactions in the body that is detrimental to different cells, and it can even damage the DNA directly. So that radiation is known to be dangerous, but the radiation that we encounter on a daily basis that we use for cell phones and Wi-Fi, that's non-ionizing radiation. So the question is, you know, is that safe? Does that have any biological effect? And the answer that, you know, that you get from a lot of, I could say mainstream science is that non-ionizing radiation does not produce hazardous biological effects because it doesn't have enough energy to ionize molecules. So I could read something from the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, who is the primary authority for communications law, regulation, and technological innovation. And one of their documents, a document titled Office of Engineering Technology, Bulletin Number 56, Questions and Answers about the Biological Effects of and Potential Hazards of Radio Frequency Electromagnetic Fields, that at relatively low levels of exposure to radio frequency radiation, field intensities lower than those that would produce significant measured and measurable heating, the evidence for production of harmful biological effects is ambiguous and unproven. And then they go on to say that such effects have sometimes been referred to as non-thermal effects. Several years ago, publications began appearing in the scientific literature, largely overseas, reporting the observation of a wide range of low-level biological effects. However, in many of these cases, further experimental research was unable to reproduce these effects. Furthermore, there has been no determination that such effects might indicate a human health hazard, particularly with regard to long-term exposure. So the FCC, who puts out the safety metrics for radiation, they say that non-ionizing radiation is not hazardous because it does not cause, it doesn't have, if it's a lower power, lower than that
right.
which is required for thermal heating. But what I was able to do through study and through documented science by other scientists was kind of prove that that's not really true because it interferes with the body in a multitude of different ways, particularly just disrupting cellular communication. So it's a lot of different ways in which it does affect the body, and I can kind of go into that a little bit right now.
Okay,
so,
go ahead. You want to roll, so come on.
Okay, so one way it does is suppression of the pineal gland's production of melatonin at night. So in order to go into that in its full sense, I'm going to kind of describe first the pineal gland, and then I'm going to work my way up to the hormone that it secretes in the absence of light, which is melatonin. So the pineal gland is part of the endocrine system.
Yes.
And the endocrine system is a collection of glands that produce and secrete hormones into the circulatory system, you know, that regulate different normal biological functions. So the pineal gland is a small pine cone-shaped endocrine gland that's located at the geometric center of the brain in the brain midline in between the two cerebral hemispheres. So the pineal gland is right in the center of the brain. And for a long time, Western science, they classified the pineal gland as, this is a quote, as a vestigial remnant of our evolutionary past, meaning that it was an atrophied, non-functioning part of our biology that was just a remnant of the past. But really, that's completely wrong. In Eastern science and Eastern cultures, they classify the pineal gland as the seat of the soul in the biological third eye. So activation of this gland has been associated with an increase in consciousness and enlightenment for millennia. So ancient civilizations that knew about this pine cone gland, they used the pine cone symbol in a lot of their various artifacts, architecture, and monuments as a key to spiritual illumination. So you can find this symbol in ancient Indonesian cultures, Babylonians, Egyptians, Greeks, Romans. It's on the staff of Osiris. The Buddha has a pine cone on his head. There's a giant pine cone statue in the Vatican and in the staff of the Pope. Excuse me. And it also coincides with the Anjana chakra, the third eye chakra. So there's also a claim and validity to the pineal gland as the third eye, as it is as some of the pineal gland cells resemble retina cells in composition and in the presence of some proteins not found elsewhere in the body. And there's evidence that phototransduction genes present in the DNA of the retina are also present in the DNA of the pineal gland cells. And light from the retina is gathered through a photopigment, melanospin, that eventually reaches the pineal gland. So it's literally connected to the eyes. And it's wired to the visual cortex of the brain. So that's kind of critical because the pineal gland is involved in the circadian rhythm of the body, which is the 24-hour sleep and wake cycles. So its functionality is dictated by light itself. So during the day, the pineal gland, it produces serotonin. So serotonin is a neurotransmitter derived from tryptophan.
Right.
Neurotransmitters are chemical messengers that are transmitted through the neurons, the nervous system. And serotonin has a lot of different functionalities. Serotonin is it's involved in perception, mood, sleep, appetite, learning behavior, muscle contraction, blood clotting, bone health, sexual function, some dominance behavior, and a lot of other things. And this is because a lot of neurons in the brain have different serotonin receptors in a lot of different parts of the brain, so it has a multifaceted functionality. There's more evidence that serotonin is the mediator between the brain and gut connection. So in our guts, there's actually the enteric nervous system. So there's like 100 million nerve cells in the gastrointestinal tract of the human body.
Right.
So scientists refer to this as the second brain because it actually performs like independent function without the brain, not like independent cognition in terms of thinking, but function in terms of breaking down digestion, absorbing nutrients, and removing waste. So
right.
The majority of serotonin is actually found in the gut, and serotonin is like the mediator between the brain and gut connection. Not the sole mediator, but one of the neurotransmitters. So during nighttime, in the absence of light, serotonin is further synthesized by the pineal gland into melatonin. So melatonin is also very multifaceted, and melatonin, when it's used as a drug, is used to cure various sleep disorders, treat ocular diseases, blood diseases, cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, neurological diseases, and more. And this is because serotonin is a powerful hormone that serves as an antioxidant. So
mm-hmm.
antioxidants are, in essence, free radical scavengers that eliminate free radicals. So free radicals, there's a theory of free radicals that they are fundamentally involved in every degenerative disease and in the
right.
aging process, that all degenerative diseases are derived from free radical production. So when you have an antioxidant that removes that, you can counteract the degeneration. So a free radical is an atom or molecule that has an unpaired electron, and because of that, is highly reactive. So when you have an antioxidant, something that can neutralize that, you kind of reverse the process. So because of this, melatonin is very critical. It's one of the most potent natural antioxidants in the body, I believe, and it's very critical in terms of healing our bodies. So there's evidence out there that that the pineal gland production of melatonin is released in the presence of artificial electromagnetic fields. So that's one method, causal method, in which if we're exposed to electromagnetic fields at night, when the pineal gland would usually produce melatonin, it would decrease its production of melatonin because it may perceive that energy as light. Because as we said earlier, light is just, it is that same energy, just at a different frequency. So that's one causal method that I found. And another one is the chronic induction of heat shock proteins. So a heat shock protein is just a protein that is produced by cells in response to environmental and physiological stressors. So these proteins assist and help stabilize other proteins involved in the assembly or disassembly of macromolecule structures. So these proteins are produced from a variety of stressful conditions, including heat, cold, UV light, toxins, oxygen deprivation, heavy metals, and viral infections. So in a study titled Changes in Cellular Proteins Due to Environmental Non-Ionizing Radiation, heat shock proteins, the scientists, they studied the effect of extremely low frequency and microwave radiation on cells' heat shock response. So, and they found that heat shock protein 70 was released during exposure to extremely low electromagnetic fields. And the theory is that the chronic release of this protein causes the cells to be more resistant to apoptosis, and that plays a role in
that cell death,
development.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's part of cell death.
All right.
Yes,
right.
Apoptosis is a highly structured and systematic cell death. So
yes, sir.
We know that cancer is pretty much the opposite of that, the proliferation
right.
of cells that are damaged or old that won't die. So
right.
when cells grow too much and spread wider, they produce tumors and whatnot. So to have a failure in apoptosis due to electromagnetic radiation is another causal pathway in which it affects the body. So there's
Brother Shahid,
yes, sir.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I just had a question, brother. I love the information you're giving us. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan reiterates that the Navy beam protects us from radiation. How do you think the Navy beam is the Navy beam is incorporated into that, or how do you think the Navy beam assists with that process, especially with the second one that you found?
Oh, it does a multitude of things, and I was actually going to mention that last because that's like kind of the best part to me of what I've been able to uncover.
Save it for last.
Dude, look, you got to beat the man to the punch, Tariq.
Save it for last, because I've been studying that beam, man, for about 5 years now. So you know, I'm just really anxious to ask that question. But you can save it for last, bro. You know, you don't have to say it now. You can save it for last.
All
okay,
right.
Yes,
as
sir.
You were, sir.
Yeah. So that's one hypothesis of a causal link between electromagnetic fields and the induction of hazardous biological effects, because in the document, that's what they stated that they needed for proof was an actual causal link, not a correlation, but a causal pathway in which the energy could produce hazardous biological effects. So then upon further studying just the human biology, I just found that there's a lot more to it, and there's fundamentally we are beings of light and energy. So biophotons are photons of light of non-thermal origin that are produced by biological organisms. So all living plants, animals, and humans emit biophotons. The primary focus of that, or the primary takeaway for me from this study, is that along with the electrical and chemical mechanisms in which our nervous system communicates with, biophotons, the study of biophotons indicates that fundamentally your nervous system and the nerve cells through the microtubules in the cytoskeleton also communicate through biophotons. So our cells are communicating with each other through electromagnetic radiation in a sense. So that I don't have a particular causal link, but it seems fundamentally if our cells are communicating with energy, then our bodies are going to react to energy. And doesn't necessarily have to be enough power to cause thermal heating, but the interference that the energy is given to our bodies is having an effect, whether we know it or not.
That's right.
So there's also there's actually a plethora of information out there that indicates that our bodies use energy to communicate and function at a most fundamental level. There's some science by a Dr. Luc Montagnier, who actually won the Nobel Prize, who demonstrated that he could replicate a DNA strand using just water and electromagnetic energy.
Say his name again, brother.
Luc Montagnier.
Can you spell his last name?
Montagnier. Yeah, everybody in the audience can look him up when you get the chance, and his findings are definitely very powerful in terms of the implications from them. So that's another case and another well-documented study indicating the applicability of electromagnetic energy and its fundamental use by different facets of human biology. So I guess, now we can go into your favorite part, Brother Tariq. How do we defend ourselves against, the assault that we're under? So,
we scared everybody. Now we gotta reassure everybody with the
right.
With the wisdom. Come on, with the wisdom.
That's right.
Yeah, so what I was able to find with the Navy beam was that it is multifaceted in its plethora of ways that it is beneficial to the body. It really is a superfood. I know we hear that a lot, that a lot of foods are considered superfoods nowadays, but the navy bean is like nothing else that I'm aware of. And really it just gives
That's
credence
right.
to, you know, our teacher who prescribed it for us, because in the 1930s he didn't tell us, you know, the pathways that it can use to protect us against this or that. He just said, you know, eat this. This will protect you against radiation. But now,
that's right.
You know, we as scientists in the nation, then we have the ability to prove, you know, the legitimacy of our teaching.
Right. Come on.
That's right.
So what I found it to be is that the navy bean is almost like an antidote to the multitude of chemical and energetic assaults that our bodies are under. So, you know, in this day that we live in, we have toxic air, toxic food, toxic
right.
soil, toxic toxins, and heavy metals in the water.
Yes.
It's very, yeah, and then, you know, we had this radiation miasma that we live in.
Right.
You know, so it's a lot that our bodies have to deal with that we may not even be aware of. But one of
That's
the
right.
best solutions or defenses against the different things that we are under is the proper diet.
Right.
So we supply our bodies with the correct nutrients that you get from eating the correct food, then you equip your body with the mechanisms that it needs to defend itself and to detoxify from certain toxins that are within our bodies. So the navy bean is a good source of protein, copper, magnesium, iron, potassium, folate, and zinc. So we know that a lot of women, because they have menstrual cycles, they are iron deficient because they don't have the requisite iron they need from the food nowadays, and that causes anemia. But we know that the
right.
navy bean is a good source of iron, so that's one thing. The navy bean
right.
is also a good source of iodine. So in the case of nuclear radiation, which can be ionized particles and gamma radiation, nuclear fission produces a radioactive form of iodine, which can bind to iodine receptors in the thyroid. So
right.
when you consume healthy iodine, that prevents the nuclear or radioactive iodine from binding to those receptors. So the navy bean is also a good source of iodine, which prevents the radioactive iodine from binding to the receptors on the thyroid. The
I'm sorry to cut you off, but Shahid, for anybody that did not know how the navy bean protects you from radiation, Brother Shahid just answered it for you. Anybody that wanted to know the mechanism behind it, I'm sorry, brother, but I just had to bear witness, brother, because this is something that has – these are something that a lot of the believers have – and people in general, like, how does this bean protect against something as potentially deadly as radioactive activity? So I thank you so much, brother, for your research, and you can continue. I just wanted to just express how grateful I am to that. So thank you.
Yes, sir.
I second his fanboying right now. I'm seconding that. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Right, but brothers, that's not it. It's more.
I'm ready. Go ahead, sir.
Right. So that's one thing, iodine. But it also protects against radiation in, I think, in the mechanisms that I mentioned before. So we talked about melatonin being an antioxidant that heals the body. But melatonin is derived, to my understanding, from serotonin, which is derived from tryptophan. So you actually tryptophan. Tryptophan is an essential amino acid, meaning you can't produce it by yourself, so you have to get it from your diet. And the navy bean is also a great source of tryptophan, so that your body eventually produces melatonin out of. So that's another method that I believe that the navy bean can heal the body. And also, the navy bean is the highest plant source of phosphatidylserine. So phosphatidylserine is a phospholipid that is a major component of all cell membranes. and it plays a role in cell cycle signaling, specifically in apoptosis.
Mm.
So what that means is that when eating navy beans and we get more of this this phospholipid, it helps produce it helps in the apoptosis process. So we,
like
we just talked about before, that is essential in counteracting the cancer production, cancer process. So it's, I mean, that's just what I'm beginning to understand about how the navy bean counteracts the effects of radiation, but it's so much more. And then also, the navy bean counteracts some of the other assaults that we're under. So I know we had our great brother, Dr. Wesley Muhammad, on the line a few weeks ago, and he talked about the estrogen assault that we're under. So the navy bean, it has magnesium and zinc in it. And those two nutrients are essential in the production of testosterone. So Dr. Wesley talked about how we are deficient in testosterone and we have excess estrogen inside of us due to the estrogen that's put into the waters and our food supplies and et cetera. So the navy bean is essential almost in producing testosterone. But it's also it also helps – hold on, let me also, I guess more so on the How to Eat to Live side, which is the book that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad prescribed for us, which is really, at this time, we can take it as divine revelation because it really has world profound implications for everybody.
That's right.
The book,
God in person.
He's telling us how to eat to live to survive, you know, in these trying times. The book really gives foresight into, you know, all the assaults that our bodies are going to be under. So in that book, he prescribed some of the best vegetables that we can eat as broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower. So all of those vegetables fall under the category of cruciferous vegetables, and cruciferous vegetables are actually especially great at expelling excess estrogen from the body because inside of them they have they have a component called indole-3-carbinol, and that component removes excess estrogen from the body. So navy beans, healthy fruits, and healthy vegetables help detoxify the body from heavy metals, and magnesium and specifically hinders the absorption of fluoride into your cells. So we know fluoride is also a neurotoxin that they tell us is good for our bodies, and they put it into it's good for our bones and our teeth, and they put it into our water supplies and our toothpaste, but really it's not good for the body, and it's actually the number one calcifier of the pineal gland. It covers the pineal gland and calcium.
That's right.
So those are just some of the information that I found out upon my independent studies from graduating with my electrical engineering degree. But I say all that to say to the audience that just because you have a title, that is not who you are. You are you're a multifaceted being capable of learning, you know, learning and mastering different areas of life. So just because you have the label as a civil engineer does not mean you can't learn astronomy. It doesn't mean you can't be an artist.
Right.
You know, that's why, for those who don't know, our teacher, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, said that every time you're looking at a black man, you're looking at a god, not just one thing, but you can master all things. Anything you want to put your mind to, you have the ability to learn that to its fullest extent and master. There's nothing that you can't do.
Come on.
That's right. Wow.
Yeah, so that's just a little bit of what I found out.
I got a series of questions. First off, let's just reiterate the fact that my brother said he is an electrical engineer. Okay, so for all of my engineering people out there, people in science, it does not matter what you go to school for. Learning must happen outside of the classroom, outside of academia, right? You always have to be a student. And I'm talking to myself on first and foremost because I know there's a lot of times where I should be reading or, like, looking into my own area of science and into other things more, but I'm thankful that this brother came on. I didn't know. Listen, they say like, all the time, you don't know what's in your brother. But I was like, listen, I'm like, man, I got all these, like, it's 4 pages of notes and everything. Also, Brother Shahid, how old are you?
I'm 22.
Okay, so right there.
Hold up for a minute. I just want to say something real quick. Brother Shahid and I actually are only 12 days apart in age. He was born December 7th, 1994. I'm the 19th, December 19th of 1994. I just wanted to put that out there that his brother and I have the same birth year and birth month. So I'm very proud of that. But you can go ahead, Brother Jabra. I didn't mean to,
sir. So,
you know. I just wanted to put that out there.
So I'm the oldest on the line right now, which is weird. I'm rarely the oldest in the room in my school. I'm 23, right? November 12th, 1993. This brother's 22, all right, dropping this wisdom. So talking about what's in the minds, hearts, and souls of not only our people, but our young black men and women, okay? One thing that we love to highlight on the STEM files, there are people, young people, doing things and people that have knowledge and wisdom that we need to tap so that we can move forward and move society forward. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
So I know a lot of us that don't want our children looking at us saying we didn't do anything for them. You know what I'm saying? We want to be able to be people that take what this brother is saying and put it into fruition, make it tangible, make it be able to be observed, make it prosperous, and make it be able to positively impact and affect the future for generations to come. So I thank you so much, brother, for, like, you got me hyped. Like, I'm over here, like, I'm on a head study group or something. Like, it just got, like, you got me so hyped. But, oh, man, so there's that. I don't know. But, Tariq, you got something? Because I'm over here just, I start rambling. You know how I get.
No, brother, you've been taking the words right out of my mouth from the very beginning, brother. Like I always say, Brother Jabril is like my second mind. Everything he says, I'm thinking, or everything I'm saying, he's thinking. So I'm telling you, I don't think you cannot describe the happiness I have right now because of how much time and effort that Brother Shahid has put into his work and his research and the things that he's working on. I too am very, very passionate or concerned with someone being more than just what they went to school for, or learning more than what they went to school for. And Imhotep, for those that know Imhotep was an Egyptian healer. He was make the word a little bit more correct. Not Egyptian. He was from Kemet. That was the correct term for it. But he was a doctor. He was an architect. He was an engineer. So he was one of those first people from our descent from where we descend from to be extremely gifted or involved in other areas of science at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's a good example of it. A lot of people call that term a polymath. A polymath is somebody that is well studied or well learned in many areas of endeavor. So, for those who want to, you know, use that word and to describe what Brother Shahid is, Brother Shahid is a great example of a polymath. He is a brother who is well learned in in many different aspects. You know, so I just wanted to kind of give a little educational piece to it. But like Brother Jabril was saying, I'm on cloud nine. I'm extremely happy. I just want to continue on with the show. It's amazing how we still have an hour left. You know, I thought that would have taken up at least an hour and a half by now, but we only have an hour. We're a little over an hour right now. So I want to keep it up, keep the momentum going.
Yes, sir.
But Shahid, is there anything you want to add real quick before we continue?
I haven't fleshed out a lot of the other science that I've been studying in regards to the body, so I don't have too much more on the radiation piece.
Okay, well, don't hold on to that.
And a lot of say that again.
You giving us?
I was just saying,
that.
Don't hold on to that.
I'm just saying, yes, sir.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah. So a lot of the other science that I've been studying, it kind of needs mass or like a visual representation to kind of share. That was the main thing from my studies that I wanted to get across today is we do have to take some initiative to protect ourselves. Once we know better, we have to we have to do better. We have to take the action to protect ourselves against any assault on our optimum health. So
right.
The radiation that we use on a daily basis, you know, to communicate, like I said before, the ones that we're using, the energy that we're using right now to make this call happen, it is real in the sense that, you know, you brothers are in Philly, in Atlanta, and I'm in Maryland, and we're all able to communicate just as that is real, so is the effect that it could potentially have on our bodies. So
right.
We have to do what we can to protect ourselves and learn as much as possible on it, because if they're not going to, you know, we live in a capitalist society where people do whatever they need to do to make their bottom line and make as much money as profit as possible, and that may not coincide with what is best for the optimum health of whoever's using their service or product. So because of that,
right.
A lot of times we have to take the initiative to protect ourselves against whatever assault that may be there. So one thing that we can do is when we go to sleep, try and make it as dark in the room as possible and turn off any device that will be emitting energy, electromagnetic radiation, so that it won't interfere with the production of melatonin. That's one thing we can do. And also we have to change our diets into the proper food. So the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that we need to eat the right foods at the right time. And it seems so strange that, you know, and when you're talking about an energetic assault, when you're talking about electromagnetic radiation, that the guideline to protect ourselves is actually a book on diet. How to Eat to Live is actually the best defense that I could prescribe to anyone listening to protect their bodies from it.
Right. Brother Shaheed, I have a question for you, and you have more than enough intelligence to answer something like this. And it's in regards to How to Eat to Live, because just based off what you've done so far, brother, you have a profound understanding of it. When there are a lot of people who are saying that How to Eat to Live doesn't work, or doesn't work for them, or it's not enough to get them to where they want to be. How would you respond to that? If I said that to you right now, Brother Shaheed, you know, How to Eat to Live is just not working for me. You know, I tried everything and it just doesn't work. How would you respond to that?
I would say kind of be patient and read the book again and try to read it with a greater understanding, because in the book he outlines a different he outlines a spectrum for different people at different stages in their lives. So he talks about meat and saying which meats to avoid and which ones that you can eat. But then he further says that optimally, you know, meat wouldn't be good for you at all. It's not optimum for a human body to eat meat at all, but he says that you can eat it. And there's some that you must avoid at all costs, like pig. You should never eat pig at all if you can avoid it. Never eat a pig. But if you are to eat meat, eating a chicken is better than eating a pig. So it covers a wide spectrum for different people at different stages in their lives. So, I mean, I know personally that How to Eat to Live is real. It's not
right.
It's not pseudoscience. It's not anything more than actual tangible fact. And one of the main reasons I know that is because my sister actually eats one meal. This is hard for some viewers to maybe believe. She actually eats one meal every 3 days. Right.
Wow.
So she fasts for 2 days consecutively, then she eats again. And she is not she's not on her deathbed. She's 26, I believe, but she looks like she's aging backwards. Because in that book it outlines how the multiple benefits from fasting and how the longer duration that you give your body in between meals allows your body to remove the toxins and to heal itself. It slows
right.
down the metabolism. So that's another thing that I found about free radicals, is that your body produces them as a natural byproduct of metabolism. So when your metabolism is just running really fast, you're really just burning out your life force, and your body doesn't have time to heal itself and to repair. But when you slow that process down, then it can use energy a lot more effectively, and your body can heal itself. So, I mean, How to Eat to Live is backed by real factual science, not necessarily anyone's opinion. But just those who are having trouble with it, I would encourage them to read it again and try out different parts that that you may seem skeptical, that that seem kind of hard to believe. You know, he says in that book that you could live 1,000 years. There's no limit to how long you can live if you would eat properly at the right time. So it's a really basic concept that are given, but when they're actually tried out, and then you do the research on your own, you'll only verify what's written in that book. It's really a book for everyone, How to Eat to Live. So it's really, I called it earlier, divine revelation, because it really will transform your life once implemented. Once you really
right.
Are able to, you take control over your life. When you're not dictated to your next meal, but you can, a lot of Muslims that do How to Eat to Live, I know you guys can bear witness to that. You know, you may go, if you're really busy in your day, you may not eat on accident for a whole day. You may just, oh, I forgot
right.
to eat today. Because, yeah, you just,
Right,
because you're just moving and you're
so busy,
and your body is
right.
so accustomed to eating once per day that, you know, when you miss it, you know, you're really not stressing over it. You know, you can just eat again tomorrow. But for a lot of people that are so accustomed
yeah.
to eating on demand, eating 3 meals a day, they
right.
will never accidentally not eat. They can't even go, you know, so much
cannot
as 6 hours it. Without eating.
Right. And just to add really quickly, you definitely hit the nail on the head. You know, a lot of times you hear, you know, people say, you know, how you live doesn't work. You know, one thing that I like to refer back to is we're taught that everything has a physical and a spiritual counterpart, right? So
mm-hmm.
a lot of times the mind of the human being is so powerful, whereas though you can do something, and if you do not think it's going to work, it won't, you know, and if you have a negative attitude towards something, then you'll get what the negative attitude produces. So if I'm sitting here trying to eat, like, this ain't going to work, or I'm, like, very negative about it, it's not, you're not going to have the same effect versus having a positive attitude, you know, toward
that same thing.
I think also, too, you know, some people need more than just diet. Because diet starts it up. But then some people need to move. You know what I'm saying? Some of us need to work out, get to walking. I'm like Muhammad teaches that walking is the best exercise. And a lot of us
that's
have
right.
sedentary jobs and riding cars. So that adds to that as well. Then there's sleep, too. A lot of us stay up very late and don't get, like, you know, a good amount of sleep. You know, what are our thoughts like? And another thing, too, I think when you mentioned metabolism, a lot of people talk about, well, if someone's overweight, they talk about how how heightening or speed up the metabolism is good for, like, burning off the fat. Because, like, I think theoretically if you have a slow metabolism and you're, like, overweight, then, like, you would theoretically gain more weight. Something like that. So I think that's, like, what people will say. So I think that definitely being able to get those, you know, talking about. And sometimes, like you said, you do need something extra. Because a lot of times it's not just weight. It's people got toxins in them that's sticking onto them and adding extra, like, you know, if I want to say fat or whatever, that if they can get that off of them, it would make a world of difference. So definitely just testifying to what you were saying, that How to Live does work, and we have to really give an honest approach and kind of even relook at ourselves and our mind as we kind of go
right.
through this. So.
Yeah, yes, sir. I think that's definitely true. I think that's a great point as well, is that I'm pretty sure, I would have to verify this, but I'm pretty sure he says that in the book, that it's not just physical food as well, but the spiritual thoughts and the spiritual food
right.
that you're feeding yourself
right.
also play
right.
a critical role in your health. And
right.
furthermore, scientists are now, from many different fields, are bear witnessing to the effect of intention.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different scientists who are creating or reproducing scientific studies which the intention actually manifests a physical change in reality. So we can't just think of our thoughts as some non-tangible thing that is abstract, but your thoughts are actually a physical entity that produces a physical result. So the way you think definitely has an impact on reality, I mean directly. And actually biophotons, I mean, I'm very a very novice student of that study, but I know one part of it is that there's a relationship between directed, focused, concentrated intention and the emission and the coherence of the biophotons emitted. So it's a really really deep study that has profound implications that I would encourage everybody to study biophotons and directed intention. And I also agree with the exercise part is that, you know, we got to get up and exercise to be healthy. And that's a good point that sometimes that's the only way as well that to lose some of the weight that we may have is to, you know, there's no avoiding getting up and burning it off. But how to eat to live definitely works. I mean, I would state that as an actual fact to everyone.
It is be too long. You know, Brother Shaheed, before we conclude the show, now we're not ending the show, but I just want to say this, you know, halfway through, that our nation is truly in good hands.
Yes.
Because we have so much talent and drive, especially among the young people in the nation, to really turn the nation into what it's supposed to be. You know, so I just want to thank you. I want to thank you for your hard work and your tenacity and your willingness to see a strong and sustaining people, you know, especially getting through a world that's falling apart. So I just want to take the time out to thank you for that, brother.
Right. Yes, sir. All praise is due to Allah. And for those on the line, you will often hear Muslims say that. But we do want to make that point that that's not a ritualistic statement, but that also, too,
right,
is an actual fact that we know that anything I just said is not, you know, I didn't study, go into different cells and put them under different radioactive environments, but other scientists did that, right? So I'm just the beneficiary of their study. I'm the beneficiary of a lot of people who came before me and laid a path. So anything that I produce moving forward indefinitely is a derivative of somebody else's success. So when we say all praise is due to Allah, we're saying that ultimately all the praise, all the accolades, it all comes from the same source, which is God. So anytime you give me a compliment, we always have to put it where it truly belongs. So, you know, I'm thankful for you brothers that are really leading the way, truly leading the way. And when you first asked me to come on the show, I had to push it back because I know y'all had some great speakers. And I wanted to make sure that I some nice, orderly studies in front of me.
Right. And I respect that, too, because it just shows your humility and your willingness to prepare for something that, you know, not just so quick to jump at an opportunity. You're willing to step back and say, hold on, let me analyze the opportunity and see what I need to do to prepare for it first, and then just let that person know, okay, look, I'm ready. Is the opportunity still there? And again, you can come on this show as many times as you like, because I know there's going to be instances where you'll have more knowledge to give and more research to expound upon. So this platform is open to you at any given time.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. All right, Brother Jabril, did you want to take it off for a minute?
Yes, sir. You know, I'm always ready and willing to go. So, you know, just going back over your bio, sir, I was looking at, you know, some of the work that you do at your own current job, and it's talking about the systems engineer conducting systems integration for transponders onto aircraft. I actually wanted to speak on that because I actually do some of that myself, actually kind of transitioned into a newer position where I'm doing some electronic water cooling system integration and some other things involving valves and actuators and stuff. So I was curious if you can go into that position and kind of like what it just generally entails, you know what I'm saying, kind of how, you know, that's progressing and things of that nature.
Right. So currently I'm working as a systems engineer, like you just said, doing system integration. So it's not too much that I really have to give on that.
Right.
It's not too complicated. It's just about taking an old piece of electronics and integrating it onto to new platforms or new aircrafts that they have. So When you do that, anytime you integrate a piece of technology into a new system, you have to make sure it interfaces. So you have to make sure that it flows smoothly onto the new platform, and that every the integration of what's new does not interfere with what was old, and that the two things are compatible. That's pretty much it. I mean, a liken to that is like putting a foreign substance into a new body. Often the new body will attack it, but if it's the proper material, or if it's put in a certain mechanism, then the body will accept it. So it's just kind of like that. I mean, I don't have too much to share with that, but I mean, that's just another example that for all those young potential college students who are listening, that what you learn in college is often not what you use in the real world, but what you learn in college is often just a template to indicate that you have the ability to learn fast and the ability to learn new tools and new mechanisms that you can use in the real world.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And speaking of going back to college as well, you know, one thing, I was actually, you know, unfortunately I was at the hospital. One of my family members is going through something at this time, but, you know, a lot of the best of planners, I was able to impart some mentorship on a young woman. Her name is Deja and everything. Her mother, Susan, who's a friend of my family, and she's, you know, trying to go to school for, I forget what it is, honestly, but I was talking about networking, amongst other things. And one thing I think is underestimated is the power of the people you know at any particular given time. And I just wanted, you know, to speak to, you know, I guess your network, how you've grown it, how you've attacked and, like, kind of worked through people in the sense that mentorship, opportunity, and just kind of like, you know, enriching your life in various aspects. I know me, you, Brother Tariq, had the pleasure of, you know, speaking to a mutual, you know, friend of you and I, kind of go over some business and whatnot. So that's just one example. But if you can kind of highlight that some more, if it's like mentorship from like teachers, professors, fellow classmates, you know, people, how has that affected your life, you know, thus far?
Yes, sir. This is often a cliche, but it's totally the truth that networks and who you know is really everything, because it's not the only thing that you always, when in college, don't make sure that, I mean, do not only try to talk to people to talk your way to success through relationships. You also want to make sure that you're competent and capable in your field. But even if you are competent and capable, the most competent and the most capable, if you don't know anybody who can set you up to be successful, you can really find it difficult because, I mean, that's the way this society works in that, that's the way life works, that people, we're born into an established society where people are, you know, running the world. So there's different people in different facets of society who are in place. So in order to move in and accomplish something or build something or find a job or whatever it may be, it's easiest to get into whatever you're trying to do when you have somebody there that is can put you on, in a sense. That's really the best way to ensure success is to have an inside man there who can help you out. And just having friends in all walks of life is the easiest way to get something done. You know, unity is what really can propel you to be successful in any field, is to have teamwork and unity. So for me, a personal example was I got an internship my freshman year at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, and I did pretty well the first summer. So afterwards, that same mentor, he brought me back for the next summer. So after the second summer, I had the chance to come back for a third time. So I chose not to because I wanted to get involved in a different internship that was more related to my field, but had I stayed there at NASA, I could have came back for a third summer and potentially after that a full-time job. So upon graduation, I would have had a full-time job lined up for me and everything just through the connection that I had from that one experience. So, and, you know, it's not easy for a lot of people to find jobs regardless of what major you have in this climate in America. There's just not a lot of jobs available. So, That's a good example for me of just when networking is really pivotal in all walks of life, in any field of life. And the friends that you make, this is one of my biggest points, that the friends, if you go to college and at HBCU and you study in the engineering field, nowhere else will you find that many, you know, black engineers who think like you, who are, have similar goals in one place. So when you have friends, don't just think of them, oh, that's my guy, that's my friend, that's my bro, or that's my sister. You should think of them as potential business partners to start, you know, whatever you want to start.
Right.
Because y'all have similar goals in life, and you guys working together have the intellectual capacity to bring whatever you want into reality. So, I mean, that's really the best network right there. For me, from college, was just the friend, the intelligent, young black people that I met in all different types of fields. So I met artists, I met political scientists who all looked like me and thought like me, who were intelligent and capable, and that are potential lifelong friends and lifelong partners along the way.
Yes, sir. No, and I think that's super powerful. And even something I want to list is even going into a deeper level than just being in the nation. I don't know if you know how me and Brother Tariq ended up first meeting slash talking, but so I wasn't even aware. My mom actually talked to me like, you know, Tariq Cardiac Muhammad or whatever on Facebook or whatnot. I was like, no, I've seen him, but I'm not really sure. So he, one time he ends up calling me and then found out from me, from another brother who's a mutual mentor of ours, Brother David. So you talk about being a nation of people who not only have goals, but also are centered on the same spiritual basis.
Right.
You know, like I say, imagine the level of connectivity and what we can do on that level. So we're talking, and then, you know, he asked me different questions. I said, yeah, bro, so I got this company. I said, would you want to be my vice chairman? I was like, what? Like, and it, I tell him this all the time. It's like, he literally, like, I always knew that I was going to own something in regards to STEM, want to have my own company. I was like, bro, like, a lot of just, like, put this in my lap right now. And it's like, you know, I'm always thankful about that. But just think about not only how you can seek out, but if you, when you do good works and if you do things, people seek you out, and then you're able to, like, kind of go from there. So I just want to highlight that as well. But you were so right. So right. So like, you know, character. Character is very big. How you carry yourself and then the values and morals that you abide by, people see those things. And, you know, want to be around people they feel they can trust, that can get the job done. And they generally have a good, you know, character about them, and they make and people like them. So that's a very good point, you know. So I definitely thank you so much for highlighting that. But hey, you turned down NASA, bro? Like,
The thing is, I was looking for something more tailored to power and energy.
Right. Yes, sir.
In retrospect, I wouldn't have done it that way. The way in which I did it, but, you know, that was just another learning experience.
Right.
You know, everything in life is a learning experience. But, no, NASA's a great they have a lot of great projects there. It's a really great environment, and they also is very conducive to interns. They have a huge internship program that I would encourage all everybody who's majoring in a STEM field to try and apply to NASA, because they have a great program there where they have interns from all around the country come to their different NASA sites around the U.S. And work on different projects. So when I was there, I was working on a star identification algorithm for a star tracker, which pretty much just determined the attitude of a spacecraft or where it was pointing at in the sky by using the algorithms to use the stars in the background as like a template or a map. So it was really cool. I mean, I never did anything at that time with computer programming or I didn't know anything about satellites, but that experience was really great for me. It helped a lot. And what's funny is months before that, I kept joking around with one of my friends saying we were talking about what we were going to do over the summer, and I was like, man, I don't know, but I want to build a satellite. I literally was just joking around, but I kept saying it, and kind of like LeVar Ball, I just spoke it into existence.
Come on.
Right.
There it is. Yes. Yes, sir.
So, yeah, that's another great point that for all those who are just starting out in their pursuit of their dreams or their careers, and even those who have been in long pursuit of your careers and your dreams, you don't stop just because you hit a roadblock. You got to say it, speak it into existence, and then bring it into existence, but you keep going because the way that we currently see our dreams come into fruition is not how it's really going to happen. It's going to happen in ways that we can't see right now with our limited knowledge, but there's going to be roadblocks that we don't expect to come, but you just keep moving forward perpetually, regardless of what happens. And then eventually you'll reach your goal and you'll get there in a way in which you're stronger and wiser than you ever expected. So we just got to keep moving forward regardless of the different trials and tribulations that come, because the one thing we know for certain is that they're going to come in some way, shape, or form. But just keep moving and keep pushing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, don't want to hog the mic for too long, but Tariq, did you want to ask anything?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I respect how much control you had. In terms of NASA and how you were looking for something a little bit more in your area, I respect the control you had to say, okay, you know, even though I don't really have my own avenue or platform set up yet, you still took the, and you still had enough control to say, okay, this is not what I want. I want what I was trained in, you know, and I have a lot of respect for that, because there are a lot of people that are not working in the area they went to school for at all. There are a lot of people working that majored in biochemistry and they're working at McDonald's. You know, so that is something that I definitely respect, because it's a huge problem now. When you go to college, they don't teach you how to make a job for yourself with that particular major. They just feed certain things at you and just expect you to grab onto it the best way you can. But I respect the approach that you took. Where do you see yourself 10, 15 years from now? Do you still see yourself working in the same, or for the same company that you work for now, or do you see yourself more of as an entrepreneur in STEM and really grabbing a hold of the industry yourself?
Yes, sir. In no way, shape, form, or fashion do I see myself working for the company I work now, even a year from now. I want,
yes, sir.
And looking forward to being an entrepreneur, and that's always been my ultimate goal. And when I first decided to concentrate in the power and energy track, that's what I wanted to do, is produce energy in an innovative type method, and working for myself. So, you know, we want to build a nation, a sovereign, independent nation, you're going to need your own independent methods of producing energy, of extracting energy from the earth. So that's really what I want to do ultimately. And I know there's a lot of intermediate steps I have to take for that, but yes, sir, there's no hope for us, for any of us, in these corporate America jobs. We have to know that all that is really coming to an end, as you know, as we live in a transitory period between two worlds, that a lot of us may be on the line now that have these big dreams and big goals that we have intrinsically, naturally. They're really for us to build our own world, not to work in sustaining a world that's falling as we speak, but for us to use our intelligence and our innovation and all the dreams that we have, use all the energy that we have to build a better and brighter world. So that's what I envision myself doing 10 to 15 years from now. I don't know how exactly, but I'm learning the processes that I need to do now in the same way that I've kind of been studying biology independently. I know I'm going to have to use that same initiative to do independent study from a school system or anything like that to build my own and do for self,
right?
Because that's ultimately the goal for everybody.
Yes, sir. Well, absolutely. Well, you're definitely. I know he's about to say exactly what I'm about to say. So I'm gonna let Brother Jabril say it.
All right. Let's see if I'm really the second mind. Well, sir.
All right.
There's a young budding company out there.
See, I told you every single time, okay. It never fails.
It's called Original Man Scientific, OMS for short. We are at your service, brother. Did I do it, Brother Tariq? Was I the second mind, sir?
Verbatim, brother. Verbatim.
Oh, man.
I told you, never fails, man.
Yes, sir. At your service, Brother Shaheed.
Absolutely. We definitely are here to support anyone that's looking to develop them, not only themselves, but whatever ideas they have. It, as they are related to STEM. So, brother, we're more than here for you. We are for you. So, whatever it is that you have in mind or that you want to do, that's what OMS is here for. We're building off each other.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, I guess that's good that I'm thankful that y'all just said that, because it kind of illustrated what I just said and gave it context for myself, that one thing that we do know, that I do know how it's going to happen, is through unity. I do know that it's impossible to do everything myself, but I have to team up with, like I said, people of like-mindedness to get it done. So, yeah, I definitely look forward to working with you brothers on some projects in the near future.
Praise God. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, family, we have, I'm excited. I know Brother Jabril is excited. I know the audience is definitely excited because they're hearing nothing but pure positivity coming from three young, intelligent black men, and that is something that the media and any other type of entertainment or media facet is not. That's just something that they're not portraying right now, So it's very enlightening and refreshing to be in this kind of conversation. And as we have 30 minutes left in the program, I want to ask Brother Shahid. We pretty much covered a lot about you. We've learned so much about what you love and what you're interested in. But one of the questions that we ask all the guests at the end of the show is, what does science mean to you? If I was walking down the street and I was maybe like 10 or 11 years old and I asked you, hey, Shahid, what is science? And why is that so important? And what does it mean to you? What would you tell me?
That's a really good question, because I was just thinking about that earlier today, actually. What fundamentally is science? And when you say that, I know you don't want me to give you the dictionary denotation of the word. You want my personal view on it. And I always look at science as just the study or the scientific, I guess I can't use that word to describe it, but the systematic process that we use to interpret reality. So when we look at a leaf, we could say, this is when we look at a leaf, when we look at a rock, when we look at the natural world obeys laws and processes. And
right.
The closer we can get to those laws and processes, the closer or the more intelligent we are. And the more intelligent we are, the more we are in tune with the universe, and the more we can produce and create from it. So science is kind of the framework or the backbone or the instrument or the blueprint for the universe around us. So science, mathematics, we're taught that Islam is mathematics, and that mathematics is Islam, and that it's actual fact. It can be proven at no limit of time. Meaning that when something is real, when we say that 5 plus 2 equals 7, that's real no matter how you look at it, how you spice it up. It's an actual fact that's reproducible. So science is a systematic process that is always reproducible, and that is something that is actual. It's not abstract. It's not variable. It's true every time.
That's right. Wow. Well, that explanation is one of our best so far. A lot of our guests have had short explanations. A lot have had long. But Brother Shahid, just to kind of expound on what you said and what I just said, why do you think science is looked at as different under everyone's eyes? Everybody has a different viewpoint of science. Everybody has a different opinion of it, or when people talk about it, everyone has a different reaction to it. What do you think is the reason for that?
I think I think it stems from a misinterpretation of it. Science is often is separated from its infinite applications in the fact that everything has laws that govern it. Right. If you study art, a lot of famous art pieces actually adhere to certain natural geometric sequences, like the Fibonacci sequence and the golden ratio, and et cetera.
Right.
So when you're doing anything like sports science, actually will break down how Steph Curry is more efficient at shooting threes than everybody else because of the mechanisms and his shooting mechanics. So science is in everything. Yeah. There's science in cooking. You can always be a better cook if you know more details, if you're more sensitive or you have more awareness on your the food and the temperature and the combination of ingredients, how one ingredient may bring out the taste in another ingredient. So there's a science to cooking. There's a science to art. There's a science to every subject because it's pretty much the framework how reality is built upon. So there's a science to everything, but people separate science into the physical categories of chemistry or biology or physics. And because those sciences are taught in a way that is confusing to a lot of people or taught in ways that are impractical, people separate themselves from it and they say, oh, that's not for me, that's for nerds, that's for I don't understand it. So when people don't understand something at an early age and they lose confidence in it, then they don't want to be a part of that growing up. So
that's right.
It's really the separation from science is just, I think, a byproduct of the society we live in, because naturally everybody has an inclination to mathematics because it's the nature of their creation. Everything in the universe, I mean, mathematics is the language of the universe. It's, like I said before, it's exact, it's true, and it's real. So when we're taught math in a practical way, when we're taught that that math is the language of the universe, math describes a fundamental process exactly. I can communicate, people from China can communicate with people in France through mathematics because it's universal. And people are taught math and science in a practical way which relates to their everyday lives, and they feel a part of it, then it won't be such a, I guess, a negative stereotype towards science. And people will want to be engaged in further knowledge and further acuteness or sensitivity to a subject, which in essence is science, becoming more science-based on that subject.
Yes, sir. That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Brother Jabril, do you have anything you wanted to respond upon or respond to that?
At this point, I'm just listening. Like I said, I'm just in awe. You know, I think me and brother may have talked for a little while. I think I maybe said something, but I had no idea that all this research was happening, you know, and everything. So I'm just thankful to Allah that we got the chance to have him on the show, and just looking forward to like all of our future interactions and everything. So, like one more brother to add to the list of just people that you just want to be like.
Exactly.
Praise be to Allah.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Praise be to Allah. All right, well, fellas, That's pretty much it. We are concluding this episode of the STEM Files. Next week is also Brother Shahid, the math doctor, who's known all over the world for, right, two back-to-back Shahids. He's known all over the world for teaching young black children how to perform math effectively and understand it. So he's definitely going to be on the show for the 17th next Sunday, this coming Sunday. And we definitely look forward to that. Brother Jabril, is there anything you'd like to add real quick?
Well, you know the promo has to come, beloved. You know we got to get to the promo.
Yes, go for it.
So, family, those listening, Original Man Scientific, in conjunction with the Ministry of Science and Technology, is hosting our first, hopefully annual, Ministry of Science and Technology Expo themed Stimulate Your Mind with student minister Nuri Muhammad, who's going to be our keynote speakers November 11th, 2017, and registration is over on October 25th. So we're asking for schools, students, companies, independent entities, individuals, those who have ideas to come showcase and just be a part of basically scientific extravaganza where we go into the work that's being done and really show that the sciences is the way to go and really push society forward. So we have that coming up, and for all information, you can definitely reach out to the ministry of myself and Brother Tariq, myself at 267-271-8197 or JabrilMuhammad93@gmail.com. That's JabrilMuhammad93@gmail.com. So, yep, with that, Tariq, do you want to close us out?
Yes, sir. Also, if you want to know more about the expo, just go to www.noimost.org. Once again, it's noimost.org. Original Man Scientific's website is currently under construction, but when it does come back into being into function, it is www.omansci. Once again, it's omansci.com. This has been the 23rd installment of the STEM Files. We will be reaching 1 year, October 1st. That was our 1 year anniversary. I'm very excited for that. And that's pretty much it. Once again, thank you, Brother Shaheed, for joining us. We hope to have you back on again. And as always, peace and blessings. And may Allah continue to bless everyone, especially those who are being afflicted by Hurricane Irma in the South. All right. Brother Jabril.
Yep, this has been another cracking open of the STEM Files. Love to have everyone. Thanks so much. Peace and blessings. And we are out.
Peace.
Thank you, brothers.